This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Elizabeth Spencer's most famous book is called The Light in the Piazza. It's about an American girl who falls in love with a man in Italy, and it's been adapted to a movie and a stage musical. But her body of work goes far beyond that well-known novella, though much of the rest is not quite as famous. Her writing tends to be challenging, filled with moral ambiguities and complicated racial and sexual relations. Now there's a documentary based on her life. It's called Landscapes of the Heart, the Elizabeth Spencer story. The title is borrowed from Elizabeth's memoir. The movie's going to premiere May 5th at the Haynes Art Center Auditorium. Elizabeth Spencer and the filmmakers are with me now. Elizabeth Spencer, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Your most famous piece, as we said, is The Light in the Piazza. And I read that you wrote that in a month. Is that true?
Well, I was going strong writing stories, and I was writing a lot about the South where I grew up. But as I'd lived in Italy for about 5 years, my husband got tired of hearing about Mississippi. He was English, and he suddenly said, "Why don't you write something about Italy, where we lived for a good while?" So I thought I might try it. So I sat down and started. I thought this will be about a 20-page story, and it suddenly began to grow and grow and grow, and it turned out to be a novella that could eventually be published as a separate novel. And then the movie people got interested, and it doesn't die. It keeps coming back. And the big surprise was when they suddenly sought it out for a musical.
not just a musical, but in fact, an award-winning musical.
Right.
And the American Theater Wing's Tony Award goes to... The Light in the Piazza, music and lyrics, Adam Gettle.
Elizabeth Spencer wrote a beautiful, beautiful story, and it's lasted for 50 years, and it gave me 5 years of something to get up and do. And I don't make stories. I don't know how to invent them, but she sure does. And she gave us all something that just inspired us to work and to try to do our best.
That's Adam Gettle, who won a Tony Award for Best Original Score for The Light in the Piazza.
He's a very brilliant guy, and I was so glad when he got interested in it because it got me an opportunity to meet a lot of theater people who turned out to be very cordial. They weren't formidable at all, and so I count them now as friends. But I was surprised when the musical did that well because it wasn't the typical Broadway thing with a lot of sex and, have naked chorus lines and all that, but it was a romance in a very exotic place, Florence, and a lot of people who have been there responded to what it had to say. But I get a little tired of The Light in the Piazza, not because I'm tired of the story or anything, but because I have a body of other work that seems to me is estimable and is still in print. And so some people ask me, "Have you ever written anything else?"
Well, you have, and it is formidable. And I think in many ways, far different in character than that particular piece. So so much of it rooted in the South and in the South's difficulties, the conflicts and complexities of the South. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to only ask you one more question about The Light in the Piazza, but with respect to and in the context of your other work, does it surprise you that one work about an exotic world is the most well-known when really your most powerful stuff is about the place where you lived and grew up?
Yes, it does surprise me, because I'm gratified at any recognition that comes, writers are, but it assumes such a major role in the body of my work that it sometimes overshadows the rest, which I think is more important work. But that's just my own opinion. You shouldn't ask a writer the opinion they have of their own work, because it's not as... I don't know why, but it seems to me what appeals to the public has a stronger role maybe than what you think.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, your writing is so, I believe the most powerful writing is rooted in the South and the place where you grew up. And in fact, you were longtime friends with Eudora Welty, right?
Oh, yes. We happened to meet because I went to a small girls' college that was right across the street from Eudora's house. And while I was in that college, she published her first book, Curtain of Green, which received great notices in New York, and we could all read that at least and realize a real writer was living across the street. So we undertook to invite her over to our little writing group, and to our surprise, she accepted. And that very afternoon, beautiful spring afternoon in the South, she and I got talking and became friends, and this constituted a lifelong friendship. She was a charming, wonderful, strong writer, and I still enjoy reading her work a great deal.
Did you have aspirations to be a writer when you first got to know her?
Oh, yes. I was well advanced in my ambitions from the time I was in high school. I started writing, and there was nothing really to stop me. I kept on making up stories in my head and then writing them down, and so it kept on and on like that until finally I had the good luck to have a novel published. And that really confirmed it, because you can keep on getting rejection slips until you can frame them all on or use them for wallpaper. But
well, you have written courageously, especially in the time that you were writing, about race relations in the South. And in fact, we talked about you living in Italy. When you came back to Mississippi, that was a particularly difficult time.
It was a very difficult time in Mississippi, and the intensity of it really surprised me when I came back. With a manuscript that I had worked on before I left on a Guggenheim Fellowship and then returned after 2 years. And the South had heated up tremendously, and people held violent opinions on the segregation and desegregation issues. And there were a lot of violent things that happened. And so it was difficult to talk to people about anything except just polite little things. You couldn't dream of offering an opinion or an idea that differed from the traditional ones. And this was formidable to contend with. A lot of people left Mississippi during that time.
What do you think it takes to be able to write the way you do so honestly and to see things when the most powerful elements of that story surround the conformity that rules the society of that time? Who escapes? How do you get out of that?
We're referring to a novel I wrote called The Voice at the Back Door.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was just based on things that I had observed that kept encroaching on the traditional views. Mm-hmm. And looking underneath the traditional views that were sort of rigid, like you got to believe in the Bible, every word of it, but then look underneath what you're supposed to believe, and then you see what's really going on. And that's what I was working from, is a knowledge of how the traditional viewpoint had to be undermined for people to have any sense of citizenship, that is, African Americans. And so that's what I was aiming to show by showing things that actually happened, and then you could read in between the lines.
As I said, there is a documentary now, a new one that's produced. It's going to show on May 5th. Sharon Swanson and Rebecca Cerise are the filmmakers of Landscapes of the Heart, the Elizabeth Spencer story, and they're with me now. Sharon's executive producer. Rebecca is the producer. Sharon, tell us about why you wanted to make this story.
Well, I first got to know Elizabeth through her work. The Voice at the Back Door was the first thing I read, Not Light in the Piazza. And it really resonated with me because I grew up in small town South Carolina. And it was as if she knew the people that I knew walking down the street of a small town in the South. And as we became friends and I saw more about her story, this clearly, as a nonfiction writer, this was a story, is an international story that goes back to her childhood of knowing a grandfather who wanted to enlist in the Civil War. So there's a beautiful history. And, you know, to hear her talk about Eudora Welty and Robert Penn Warren, she refers to him as Red. There's a wonderful literary history there as well, as and also a Southern culture history. I found her story to be quite brave. And I think on a personal level, having grown up in the South, my father, just before I met Elizabeth, actually, I found out that my father was a member of the KKK. And so, in a way, this story of Elizabeth is my way of perhaps paying back for the actions of my father.
Well, Rebecca, I know that your work has dealt with social issues and poverty in the past. Is that part of the attraction here? What brought you to this story and this project?
Absolutely. That is what attracted me. And like you mentioned before, I'm always been interested with people that grow up in situations like, say, segregated Mississippi, but are somehow able to break free of that and see sort of deeper truths about humanity. And when I, read Landscapes of the Heart, the memoir, and sort of heard her story, I said, wow, this is an amazing person. And one of the things I love about documentaries is it gives you the opportunity to talk about people or history that is not as well known, that's not covered by mainstream media as much. It's the unsung heroes, the pieces of history that are forgotten, and you can bring those to light. And I was extremely pleased to be part of the project and to be able to bring her really brave, courageous story and hopefully her work to a new audience.
Well, and I think sometimes when we read about writers who courageously tell the truth in spite of the sort of the conformity and the local ethic, we think they came out of the womb full-blown and as prophets. But what's interesting to me, Elizabeth, is that you actually won an award from the Daughters of the Confederacy very early on.
Oh, wow. That was the UDC.
Yeah, the United Daughters
of
the Confederacy.
Sure that anybody knows what they are now. But this was a long time ago, and when I was in high school, I think, they had a little contest that was – you were supposed to write an essay on the Siege of Vicksburg. Well, in my early years, I was a complete Confederate, and I was dedicated to everything the South thought and the South felt. And so I pitched into this with great enthusiasm. And I read a lot, and so I turned out an essay, and I won the state prize. And I went to Vicksburg itself to get my award from the UDC. And so my mother was very proud, and so was my father. We spent the night in the hotel, and I was very sure that I would always be a good Confederate.
Things changed.
Changed.
You were in high school, so things must have changed pretty quickly because you met Eudora Welty in college.
In college, yeah. But see, I believe that was when I was in high school, but I can't quite, it's a long time ago, I can't quite remember. But I think I was really, but oh yes, college began to open up my thoughts and my mind and everything, but Eudora Welty wasn't a particular rebel against any sort of convention in the South. She loved the South so much, and I do too, of course. You have this conflict of love and hate that Faulkner talked about. But Eudora's work is, if you read it carefully, it's pretty violent and pretty strong at times, but about different things from mine. And so there's not much use comparing writers ever, is there?
Right. Well, Sharon, what did this do for you, the idea of this sort of critical thinking and bringing you, as you said, up against your own lineage, your own past in some ways? Was it revealing the process of making the film for you? What did you learn in the process?
Well, I learned a lot about Elizabeth, of course, but I also learned a lot about myself and my and I uncovered these little gems in terms of Elizabeth's life. When we first started, there was a lot of discussion among other writers about the fact that Elizabeth had been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, and it was not awarded in 1957. And after many years of trying to find the right person to talk to, we did get a letter that showed that the Pulitzer Committee had indeed recommended Elizabeth for the Pulitzer Prize, but the Pulitzer Board, did not award her the fiction prize that year. In fact, they didn't award it to anyone. So,
and what was behind it?
Well, there is nothing in the archives, from what I understand, that talks about the discussion that went on behind the scenes, but the rumor mill has it that it had something to do with the segregation issue. And the world wasn't quite ready for that story, perhaps, and maybe in the way that Elizabeth was telling it, which was beautifully written. And then 3 years later, To Kill a Mockingbird, with a very similar theme, won the Pulitzer Prize. So maybe she was just too early.
Maybe. And I didn't even know I had won it for years, but I was wandering around on the Internet trying to find something relating to the Pulitzer Prize, and I thought, well, I'll just look back and see 1957 when it was up for the award, and I found out I had won it.
Or were nominated, right?
No,
actually, she was.
I won it.
57, right?
Right. She was. She was the fiction writer who was recommended for the prize by the committee.
But the board didn't give one that year.
The board refused it. They have a jury that suggests an award, and the board has the final say. So they refuse. Sometimes they do refuse. I noted on the same day that I found that For Whom the Bell Tolls by Ernest Hemingway had been awarded the prize, but the board refused. So at least I'm in good company.
You're in very good company. Well, I thank you for joining our company today, all of you. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Oh, thank you,
Frank.
Elizabeth Spencer, the subject of a new documentary called Landscapes of the Heart, The Elizabeth Spencer Story. Sharon Swanson and Rebecca Cerise are the filmmakers. Movie premieres May 5th, Haynes Art Center Auditorium from 4 to 6. Tickets are free. Fundraiser reception next door at the Ackland Art Museum. Just ahead, we're going to listen to some princess fairy tales minus the prince. Stay tuned.